And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Chudanoofa doofy poopy. Chudanoofy doofy nipoopy.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
Podcast listeners, this is for you.
Next to him, it's the bearded one, a tough shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey-o! And over yonder, the man making the magic happen, super producer, J.D.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Hit that like button and subscribe, podcast listeners. Leave us a five-star rating and review. We are going to recap all three of last night's games. We're going to hit the beach a little bit later because it's freezing cold here in Atlanta. Tass has tweet of the night. But man, last night, Shams and Sam at the Athletic reported that the Raptors and Pacers are in active talks on a deal that would send Pascal Siakam, a mainstay in the rumor mill for, I guess, several seasons now, to Indiana in exchange for a package that includes Bruce Brown, his cowboy hat, I believe, some other salaries, and then three first-round picks. And that's got everyone very intrigued. Three first-round picks for Siakam? This guy's on an expiring deal. Anyway, nothing has happened as of yet. It won't be official until, 10, 15 minutes after we do this podcast. Yeah. But what do you think here of Shams and Sam's report last night?
Pascal lovers, this one's for you. Pascal Siakam to be dealt for three first-round picks. It may seem high, but I think if there's one team that could trade high for Pascal Siakam, it is the Indiana Pacers. They basically aren't paying anybody next year other than Haliburton. They've got lots of room to give for him. This guy could be the best guy that they could get in free agency as well, right? Because there are some guys who will be free agents, but they could be signed to other deals by then. I think this is a team that could offer him the max, a team that desperately needs defense, a guy that can guard 1-4, 1-5. He'll be 30 this free agency when it comes to it. So are they giving up a lot for an older guy that may not even sign there? I suppose you could think that, but 30 ain't that old. And I think he's going to play on the ground a lot. I think he'll be fine. I do like to think the Raptors would keep him, but after making the Quickly and Barrett deal to go along with Barnes, I understand why they would move Siakam to get a hell of a lot younger, like the rest of their timeline is. And to get Bruce Brown in a Darko Rajakovic team that just wants to drive, kick, and repeat, drive, kick, and repeat, drive, kick, and repeat, he would fit in. But who knows? We're talking about it right now here on Wednesday, January 17th, if this will happen. Is this a rumor just to drive up the cost? Hey, Sacramento Kings, are you listening? You need somebody. You want to play small ball with Domantas Sabonis? Get Pascal Siakam behind him. Hey, Philadelphia 76ers, just go for it. So who knows if this happens? But it sort of makes sense, even though that those are picks are also probably just going to be, you know, between the 20s and 30s, just like Pascal Siakam was. They aren't going to be great picks. They're Pacer picks.
Yeah. Indiana currently owns a 2024 first-round pick from either OKC, Houston, the Clippers, or the Jazz. It's very complicated, okay, but there's an extra first-round pick
in there. It's the worst one, though.
Yes, it's the worst one.
Currently number 27.
Yeah, that's right. And then they own
all...
That's
a Pascal Siakam pick, right?
There you go.
They own all of their own picks, the Pacers do, from 2024 to 2030. So they have their own. But what do you think about the sort of idea of going all in with three first-round picks for a guy like Siakam, whether or not you know he's going to sign there? Is that too much? Do you think that makes sense, that they should do it, get him in the door, play with Haliburton, maybe have some success and he wants to sign there? What do you think?
It's a lot to give up for Pascal Siakam. It's not totally dissimilar to the Bulls trading for Nikola Vucevic coming off two all-star seasons. He was 30 at the time, like you're saying, Tass. Siakam will be turning 30 in not too long here, and it probably makes the Pacers about as good as it made the Bulls. A playoff team, certainly, with a chance of winning a first-round series if the matchup is correct. So why would Indiana do this? They haven't won a playoff series in 10 years. That's surprising to me. I thought it would have been a little more recently at the end of the Paul George tenure there, or maybe the Sabonis and Turner tenure, but they made the first round quite a bit, and then they would lose the first round series. And then the past couple of seasons, it's been play in and out. Giving up three first round picks for a guy you're not sure would resign, that's a big risk. But like you're saying, what they're betting on is that Siakam would enjoy playing next to Tyrese Halliburton rather than just rolling the dice and saying, hey, you might like it. Let's give you 4 months, 6 months of proof of concept to see how you fit next to Siakam. So, yeah, the money for the Pacers, it ain't really that big of a deal because they have the lowest payroll in the league this season. They're going to have money to spend in the offseason, and they just have to think it's smarter to get a little bit of a trial period there. And if it's the Raptors, do that deal in a second. Bruce Brown, win now guy. They can stay competitive this season. They could extend him next year if they decide to pick up his team option, or they could let him go and try something in free agency plus three first-round picks. Even if they're in the late 20s, you can package those and trade him for somebody. Maybe a Siakam in the future. Who knows?
That's right. Yeah, Indiana would likely need to still add about $8 million in salary to make this, again, hypothetical work. So I think Hollinger had it out there. Bruce Brown, Jordan Nwora, Obi Toppin, and then the three first-round picks, that would be a salary match. All three of those guys would be expiring, or could be. Brown has that team option, like Trey just said, next season at $23 million. Indy could take back Otto Porter Jr. too, into cap room as part of a trade. So maybe you're looking at something like that. But obviously, Bruce Brown, the key player, and then these younger pieces, Obi Toppin, going back to play with his old Knicks bros there, maybe in R.J. Barrett and Quickly. And then the picks. That's the real takeaway here. I assume, I saw here in the article, quote, sources briefed on trade talks between the two teams say that there have been several back and forth proposals made. I wonder how that's gone. Masai going, all right, we'll trade you Siakam, but we want Benedict Mathurin. Pacers saying, no, we're not doing that. Okay, we want Jairus Walker. Pacers saying, no, we're not doing that. Okay, we want Andrew Nembhard. Pacers saying, no, we don't even want to give him up. I mean, I assume it's something like this. Okay, well, you got to give us more draft picks. Okay, we can maybe do that, and we're still figuring it out because I assume the picks are nice, but a lot of reports were like Masai and Bobby Webster on the Raptors side. They do want like a young prospect, a young player. Bruce Brown is good, but maybe not the type of player you're looking for to fit the timeline. They would, in theory, want one of those other guys. Of course they would want one of those other guys from the Pacers, but Pacers should be smart to hold on to them.
Yeah, Andrew Nembhard, another Canadian on the Toronto Raptors. Seems like they're trading for every Canadian out there. That could work. Even the Buddy Hield, who is an expiring deal here, could work as a three-point shooter. The Raps could let Gary Trent go this offseason, so Buddy could fill in there if he's to get another one. I know he is an older player, but really this is what the Pacers want to do. They want to get somebody on their team instead of just waiting for July 1st and say, can you come here? Can you come here? They just hope that they can get Pascal Siakam and say, we will give you a max deal and win the bargaining, because they're a team that needs to do it. And they have lots of money come next season. Really, it's Halliburton signed to a big deal. And then it's Miles Turner at 19 per. There's lots of room. And you get one of the best free agents on your side, hopefully convince the guy that they're going to give him the deal, because the Raptors don't want to. The Raptors have Barnes and Barrett, and obviously Quickly. They don't want to pay him the max money. So I think that's what the Pacers are trying to win here. And maybe this is all a facade. Maybe this is just to get every other team bidding a little bit more. But it also looks like a facade because last year they didn't get a thing for Scotty Barnes, and then they didn't get a draft pick for OG Anunoby. To see three all of a sudden, it just doesn't seem like that's happening in the NBA at all right now.
Any other final thoughts on the likelihood of a Pacers-Raptors-Siakam deal going down here today, this week, and the 3 weeks coming?
I'd like to see Bruce Brown at the Calgary Stampede.
I'm sure he would enjoy
that.
He would absolutely have a blast. we can make that happen, I'm sure. Whether he's in Toronto or not. All right, let's get to the games last night.
We can make it happen.
We'll send him. Yeah, okay. I'll send him with a camera.
Yeah, I've been to the Calgary Stampede, and I knew somebody that made it happen, so I'll reach out to them, and we'll try and get Bruce Brown there. Okay, the games last night. Let's start with Joel Embiid scoring 41, out-dueling Jokic as the Sixers topped the Nuggets. We had this one on playback for the second half. Thanks to everybody that joined us there live on playback. Some of you watching on YouTube as we simulcasted the game. Embiid, 41 points, 7 boards, 10 assists. Jokic, 24 points, 19 boards, including a career-high 11 offensive rebounds. Old tippy-tip man there doing his thing. 3 assists, but Embiid late there, TK. scoring, I believe, 10 consecutive points in the fourth that sort of made the difference what it was. And he gets another win over Jokic, and Philly picks up a big one.
Shades of 47-18 last year in Philadelphia against Jokic in Philadelphia. What? I'm just saying Philadelphia over and over. I meant to say January the second time, but basically the Nuggets have no way to guard Joel Embiid. Yes, Embiid took over in the fourth quarter, scoring 10 straight when he went into Thanos mode and said, I'll do it myself. But he was awesome the entire night. They tried to single cover him with Jokic early in the game. He scored 7 straight. Eventually, they put Aaron Gordon on him. He really competed hard, but he gives up a lot of size and height to Joel Embiid, so Embiid could back him down or just more often shoot over the top of Aaron Gordon. Only 6 points in the paint for Jokic last night on a night when he scored 41. That was impressive. When Gordon was guarding him, the Nuggets started sending a lot of double teams at Joel Embiid, sometimes triple teams. He had 10 assists. He was seeing the court so well and was happy to get off the ball. Then he also took 6 three-pointers, only the 6th time this season that he's taken 5 or more. He was obviously feeling it with the jumper, getting warm from mid-range and then stretching it out to the three-point line as well. This was a dominant performance by Embiid.
It was cool to see in a back-to-back
end scene.
It was dominant, so it's a good way to end it. Because he was obviously fantastic. It was cool to see him in a back-to-back scenario because of all the injuries he's already had this season, where he's sitting out games and probably won't win MVP because he's not going to play in 65 games, as the new rule says. So it was cool to see that. It's cool to see that in the last 2 games against the Nuggets, even though people rip him for not playing in March, he's at 41 and 47 against Jokic. Pretty good stats.
He has a 6-2 record, I believe, when he plays against Jokic.
He hasn't played in Denver since 2019.
There you go. Okay, so a lot of these at home.
Yeah.
Still.
Why doesn't he like playing in Denver? He doesn't like the altitude. But I guess he's saving himself. I think it is key to save himself for the postseason as much as he possibly can, because he's always just not himself. He's missed so many games in the postseason. Last year, he just started to slow down. So back-to-back, it was great to see him perform, especially the jumpers. I mean, he hit 13 shots, 10 of them outside the paint, just a couple at the rim. When he's hitting those jumpers, what are you absolutely supposed to do? It was great to see Tobias Harris, another free agent coming this offseason. He's playing for a contract. Help him out. He was really, really key. Everybody on the floor, though, could score last night. Even Nick Nurse, head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers, when he was interviewed after the third quarter, he's said to Ali LaForce, it would be great if somebody played some defense out there, because nobody's playing defense. It's totally true. Everybody was sort of waiting for the fourth quarter to come, but then Embiid just stole it.
There was a little defense played on Jamal Murray down the stretch from Patrick Beverley, Morris helping out. They sort of shut him down in the fourth quarter. Murray was having a good game, but I think he went 0-for-4 in the fourth, and a lot of that was like Pat Bev sort of draped all over him. So a little bit of defense, yeah, exactly. I saw, according to ESPN Stats and Info too, Embiid became the first opposing center this season to have more points and assists than Jokic in a game. The only other one to do it in the past 2 seasons was Şengün back in April of 2023. So pretty impressive game there from Embiid. I love the assists, like you said. Like, the idea, like, when the jumper's going, okay, yeah, he's a nightmare. But they got the small guy on him, and then Jokic is sort of, like, hanging around, sort of baseline. He's trying to get out of the key, doing his little dance there. He got called for 3 seconds defensively there once. And he's just, like, not fast enough to get to these guys in the corners, and Embiid was splashing it to, like, either Tobias Harris or, you know, a Batum on that one beautiful play where he didn't even drop the ball and hit the three. He was finding those guys, and it's a tough matchup because, yeah, you're either putting Jokic on him and Embiid can sort of cook him, or you have him roaming and, you know, he's not, most fleet-footed big guy in the league, so it's tough for him to get out to those corners with all those shooters. And Embiid has gotten so much better as a passer. You know, he's not on Jokic level, but no one is. But he's gotten better and better, I think, every season as a playmaker. So
it wasn't just the corners, though. The Nuggets, to me, were confused defensively the way they were playing. There were so many times when they would go into double Embiid off a pick and roll, and they would leave Maxey wide open on the same side as Embiid. That's the easiest pass for him to make, and Maxey is a great catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. So he got into a flow. He outplayed Murray. Murray was definitely bad in the second half, 2-for-10. He had a couple of turnovers, like I said, in the fourth quarter. Both kind of like took the air out of the Nuggets as they were. One of them, they had the lead. One of them, he threw a bounce pass, hit Jokic in the knees. One of them, he hit Aaron Gordon in the knees with a bounce pass. He was just out of sorts. And if Jokic is going to get outplayed by Embiid and Maxey's going to outplay Murray, I mean, the Sixers should win that game, which they did, because they also got great X-Factor performances. Tobias Harris, 8 points at the start of the fourth quarter. That was huge, because the Nuggets were kind of struggling with Murray leading the way out there. And then Nick Batum, like you said, I guess he's the Z-Factor. 2 threes, including that crazy one in the corner. Bad pass by Embiid. Good look, bad pass, but awesome of Batum to save it. He had a couple assists, he had a couple of blocks, and he just makes every hustle play. It seemed like it was just going to be addition by subtraction, trading James Harden to the Clippers. But the fact that they got Batum back in the deal, and he's just such a savvy player and is always in the right spot, that was a great move by Daryl Morey.
Yeah, can't wait to see what they do if they think they're that close to try and even go for an additional player. But when you see games like this where you have performances from Batum and Harris, and even the bench, I thought was really key. Patrick Beverley was on fire to score 8 points. And, you know, to be super pumped up, Marcus Morris, who was also part of that trade with James Harden, slapping Marcus Morris's chest when he got that and one. They look like a team that wants to go get it, that's for sure. They are sort of aged, a few of those guys. Yeah, I'm 3 weeks away. I wonder what Daryl Morey is thinking. As Joel Embiid gets older and older and older, does he decide, we got to go for it right here, right now? Because they have a lot of guys to deal if they want to. TBD.
I wouldn't knock Morey or the Sixers or any team really like trying to add more talent to a team to go for it, but let's be honest. All of their success hinges on Embiid. Like, he should have a Dirk run in him here, or a Jokic-like run in the playoffs. He needs to do it for 20 to 25 games in the postseason. Like, the guy's, like, unbelievable right now, but okay, it's the regular season. We've seen it. Do it come playoff time. That's they have enough. I think that's they're proving that to me, because he's enough, is my point. He just needs to have it going again for 4 series here, and he could.
Yeah.
This absolutely
it's
could
true,
be.
But we see a different guy in April, May, and June. We literally always do. And I think that's why you see him hanging out a lot more in the mid-range area instead of just going banging guys just to save those legs as much as possible. But he's damn good. And I mean, teams are going to double him to get him the ball out of his hands when he's standing at the free throw line, like happened with the Boston Celtics last year. So the other guys just have to be ready to hit shots. And Maxey has to be awesome come a postseason. He's never been a number one guard in a postseason either. So that's going to be pretty damn important as well. And he was great running the pick and roll with Embiid last night.
I have two sort of weird questions about Embiid. One, when it comes to MVP, let's say he plays 64 games and you had a ballot, your Tim Bontemps, your Shams, whoever. Can you vote for Embiid for MVP? And they just then throw out the vote because he obviously wouldn't qualify? Or do they say, you can't even vote for those guys?
I think they're disqualified.
Yeah.
You can't vote for them.
Yeah,
Why would you?
Well, to like sort of send an FU, I think, to the idea of the rules. That's why I was curious whether they could. Maybe we can look into that. The other one, a lot more sillier. The DX crotch chops. He's been fine before. He did it last night.
He did.
Dropped a 3 or 4 there in rapid succession when he was going on that run. I think it was maybe after the N1 jumper, if I remember correctly.
Aaron Gordon.
Yeah. So when do you get fined for them? If you do them in some guy's face, you're good if you just do it to the crowd. You can't do it at all. Like, will he be fined for this last night?
Probably.
Yeah, it's sort of weird.
I would think so. I mean, he was fined for it earlier this season.
Yeah, I know.
These ones were less dramatic, though. And like I mentioned on playback, I think he's trying to make a distinction between crossing the arms, strictly DX. But when you do it with the arms open like that, you could at least say it's a blocking call. I'm just calling and one on him.
Yeah.
Block it versus suck it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. If the fans keep copying him, the fine may be coming. Mm. Because if it's just Embiid, a quickie, no big deal. But it looked like a fan was doing it right beside his son. And, you know, it's getting a little weird. It's getting a little awkward. But I think this rule changes after this year that you have to play 65 minimum games. I know that's sort of a load
management.
They've
added it this year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be gone. I think. It's funny because Embiid never plays more than 70 games. Even last year when he won the MVP, what was it, 66 last year, 68 the year before. He's never played in 70 games. So that's what he is doing. He needs to save his legs for as much as possible, and that's why he needs a number two guy to be great in the postseason, just because it's hard. So, I don't know. The guy won MVP with 66 games last year, so if he plays 64, what's the freaking difference?
You know it's going to happen. You know he's going to be right there at the threshold.
He's not going to get there.
And then there's going to be a massive debate, and that's why I was wondering, like, yeah, can Zach Lowe – I guess Zach Lowe doesn't want to vote for this stuff anymore, at least for all NBA. But, yeah, will they be like, no, I'm giving it to him. And they're like, you can't do that, Zach. He's like, I don't care. I'm a principal. So we'll see. Let's move on. The Suns. They ended the game with a 23-4 run. They beat the Kings 119-117 on KD's free throws. Fox getting a little too close there. Got him on the arm. It was a foul. He hits them. They win. The Kings, man, just threw away two games in a row. I mean, this is just classic Kings here. This is brutal. They couldn't hit free throws to put away Milwaukee the other night. And then this one, complete collapse down the stretch. A little prevention offense never did them any good. Bad shots, bad defense, and they lose. And a big part of it, Vogel going small, putting KD at the five, and then they ripped off this run. But, oh, Sacramento, man. Oh, man. They just have gut punch loss after gut punch loss. They're either getting waxed by the Pelicans, who they can never beat, they're losing to the Hornets, they're losing to the Blazers, or then they're playing really good teams. They look like the better team for like 40 minutes of the game and then give it away.
Ugh. That's why they got to trade for Pascal Siakam. Make the deal. Just go all in. It was interesting seeing Kevin Durant at the five spot. The last 5 minutes and 11 seconds, they decided, okay, KD, you're going to the five. And that's when they went on that 23-4 run to end this game. And I wonder if in the future here, they're going to play Kevin Durant in key moments in fourth quarters at the five.
Yeah.
It's a little like the Golden State Warriors decided, okay, you know, when they won the championship, we'll play Draymond Green at the five. Durant literally could be starting at the four, for sure. Nurkic is going to play. But to decide how we're going to beat teams, that could be the way. And Durant obviously was hot on both ends, 15 points in that fourth quarter. He was just scorching on that end. But then the block, the number five, the block of De'Aaron Fox while just standing up at the three-point line. He didn't jump. He just stood there and blocked, standing from the right side of him against the lefty, and was able to just reach across. He could have maybe called it a foul, but Durant, I think, likes it. He's apparently talked to Frank Vogel about it in even the offseason, but maybe it's because he is a little bit older and he just wants to be at that end as much as possible, but it's gonna tax you because you're going to switch every single time. That's what they're going to do. It was weird because the Kings have beaten this team twice already this season, and it looked like it was coming again.
Yeah, should have been number three here, but they gave it all away. Grayson Allen had an awesome game.
This guy's hooping.
No doubt.
29 points last night, 9 threes. If you want to be generous, you could say he had a near 5x5. 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. He's stuffing the stat sheet. Guy, second time in 2 weeks, he's made 9 three-pointers. He's shooting 48% on the season. In January, 32 for 60. That's pretty good.
Wow.
He's shooting 56% from the corners, and he's always in the corners. He hit 5 last night against Sacramento, just from the corners. The Suns are not a huge three-point shooting team, but they made 6 in the last 8 minutes of this game, going small. They switched everything. The Kings got really stagnant trying to attack switches. It turned into one-on-one basketball. It was very similar to me to the way the Warriors used to be. Actually, when they got Kevin Durant, that's why they got him, because teams figured out you play ball movement. You want to do dribble handoffs. You want everybody wheeling around the perimeter. So we switch everything. It makes it tough. Turns it into a one-on-one game. And that's definitely what happened last night. Then the Suns were smart. They ran in transition. They were getting out into the open court, I thought, a lot in that fourth quarter comeback. And that's a nice win. Nice win for the Suns. Disappointing loss for the Kings, but they got a better record through 40 games than they did last year.
Yeah. I guess. It's just like some of these, they've blown so many games they should have won. They should have a much better record, but that was a hell of a comeback. And I shared the clip. I think you saw it there on Twitter this morning, too. They were up 3. They were hanging on, Sacramento was. And for some reason, they like have Sabonis, their center, like over half court. You know, I get the idea they're trying to get like the 8-second violation on the Suns, but he falls over and then they're complete disadvantage. There's no rotations. And Eric Gordon, again, they're down 3 with like 45 seconds to go. They need a 3 or an easy basket. And he's just wide open in the corner. I mean, you get ping, ping, ping. Like, no one even close to him.
No one even close to him.
I mean, it's just like, that's embarrassing. Like, what?
Why was Sabonis out there?
Sure, fair. I know. Why? If he's out there, why is he at half court?
Yeah.
It's insanity. So they deserve to lose when they do boneheaded things like that. But, wow. What a comeback from Phoenix in a game that Booker didn't really play all that well. Or even Beal. It was KD and Grayson Allen. Grayson Allen going to be in the three-point contest? Guess so.
He should, yeah.
Yeah,
the Suns broadcasters, Eddie Johnson was yelling about it. We better see him in that three-point contest. And it's funny to see Grayson Allen because you get the typical ride with Grayson Allen. 29-20 his last 2 games. Oh, yeah, baby. 2 games before that, 5 and 8, yeah, respectively. It's the Grayson Allen experience. But
overall on the season, he's probably been the best support player.
Easily.
To the big three Suns. Yeah.
Yeah, because everybody is sort of up and down.
Yeah.
Eric Gordon started hot, but has cooled down, that's for sure. But he had a couple big threes, obviously.
Yes, wide open.
It's an interesting team. An interesting team there.
The other game from last night, Paul George scored a season-high 38 points to lead the Clippers over the Thunder. Entertaining game. You know, the Thunder were down by a decent amount. They stormed back. They took a one-point lead, and then Paul George said, no, 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 not tonight. He scored 11 of the Clippers' next 14, hit a couple threes, had that big steal and dunk to sort of ice the game. And just an awesome line, 38 points, 6 threes, 7 boards, 5 assists, 0 turnovers. This guy's on his way to making his 9th All-Star appearance. Like, he's going to be on the team, I assume, with the way he's played in 2024 and the way the Clippers are like putting together all these wins. I'd sort of be shocked if the coaches don't select him at this point.
What about Kawhi?
Both of them. I think they'll both be there.
Okay.
Honestly, I mean, I think they're, I mean, he's having
a lot of all-stars in the West.
Yeah, yeah, but they're more guard heavy, I feel like. I think he'll be okay at the forward position.
They're helping themselves the way they're rising up the standings.
Yeah,
because there's not going to be many teams that get two guys. That's 100% true. But they are climbing, locking in that fourth seed right now.
Yeah, and this is without Zubats, who is going to be out for at least 4 weeks, and so the Plum Dog gets the start. He has a good game. Him and Tice sort of have the center minutes there, and they get this victory again. This was a fun game, like really, really good game between two good teams in the Western Conference, but really Paul George just took over there, TK.
Yeah, 18 points in the fourth quarter, and you see the benefits of having Kawhi Leonard and Paul George out there. There's only one tall wing on the Thunder who could guard last night. Jalen Williams was on Kawhi for a lot of this, which left Lou Dort on Paul George. Lou Dort was giving great effort. He was there for the contest, but he is 5 inches shorter than Paul George, so he was just shooting over top of him. Mm-hmm. That dunk really surprised me. I thought he was going for a layup, and he threw down a reverse. That was pretty nice. And like you mentioned, Zubat's out 4 weeks. Luckily, they got Mason Plumlee back right at the
same time.
They don't play the exact same way. You know, Zoo's a lot bulkier. Plumlee, I feel like, has a little bit more passing skill or something like that, but they're both role guys as compared to Tice, who kind of hangs out at the elbows a little bit more. So it's nice that they got their Zubats clone back rather than having to like figure out a five out sort of deal. Good stuff from the Clippers and good stuff from the Thunder, I thought, actually getting back into the game. Jalen Williams was the leader of that to me.
Yeah.
They just got out into transition all the time, and he was the guy either pushing it, dishing it, or just scoring. I thought he had a great game.
Yeah, it is great to see Mason Plumlee back, because he was saying a couple weeks ago, he said, I don't need to come back, coach. Just play Daniel Tice, because he's willing to sacrifice. Everybody willing to sacrifice on this team, obviously. Paul George, Russell Westbrook, James Harden. We don't have to be number one guys. Let's just do our thing. And so he is desperately needed right now. Set up Paul George with that beautiful back cut pass early on in the fourth quarter. Paul George doesn't usually make that back cut. But he was trying things, and that's why he had such a great fourth. Set you up with a crossover, quick three, hit threes from the corner, 7 of 9 in that fourth quarter, and then sealed it with that dunk. 120 left with the steal, and it's more like a 270, 360 type dunk than a reverse dunk, because it's not like his back was facing the rim. It looked like more like his dunk in the dunk contest way back when he was in there. So he's looking like he can take over, and he's playing for a contract, baby. This ain't just your Intuit Dome Kawhi Leonard. I got to get paid too. So interesting stuff this offseason, because it is
save some of those toilets for me, Kawhi.
Yeah, they just started selling season seats only after the Kawhi contract. Mm-hmm. They don't know what their team is, so they had to decide, all right, we're gonna sign a guy. Because Paul George could be a free agent. Harden's already won. Westbrook has already won. And who gets the middle stall? Kawhi?
Fighting for stalls. Not the locker room stalls.
Is it an honor to get the middle stall?
Harder? Yeah.
An honor.
Oh, an honor?
You got to share a wall with two guys. I would rather have an end stall.
Yeah, an end stall. I'd rather have an end stall, too. Yeah.
James Harden's the middle stall, I think.
Yeah,
Westbrook, too.
You guys might be right. Now that I think about it, like, there's a lot of talent in this league and in the West that Paul George maybe gets squeezed and maybe doesn't make an all-star team again. But two things going for him. Or maybe three. One, the Clippers' record as they're putting together these wins. Like I said, they're on a hot streak. Two, the timing of it all, right? You want to have your best month probably like in January. You'd prefer that more than maybe the first month of the season because it's like fresh in the coaches' minds. In 2024, Paul George is averaging 27.5 points per game, 5.5 boards, 3 assists, and he barely turns the ball over right now, shooting 53% from the field and 48% from deep. Again, that's in 2024. So that's going for him. And then the final thing is, you know, Paul George was an all-star last season, and these coaches, they tend to be like, hey, that guy's an all-star. That guy's an 8-time all-star, man. He's still awesome. Okay, you're an all-star again.
That's exactly what happened last year.
I think he actually, just the timing of all this and how he's playing too, like, don't get me wrong, I think he might get in there when the coaches select, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Anything else from those games? I know we got more on Ballmer and the Intuit Dome a little bit later.
No, it was great to see Podcast P, Playoff P. I couldn't think of a closing word that started with P that was perfect for him because this was the closing P. What's that?
Perfect P?
Yeah, but more of a closure game because he was, you know, 28 in the second half, 18 in the fourth quarter. Yeah. I synonymed it. There isn't a perfect
one.
There's just not. There are some P's out there. It's not. Put them away, P.
That's pretty good. That's nice.
Put them away.
Put it on Basketball Reference. Put him away, P, when he goes off in the fourth quarter. I like that. Okay, we got to take a break. When we come back, though, we're hitting the beach to answer your questions. Don't go anywhere.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, it's absolutely freezing here in the Classic Factory, so let's hit the beach.
You got the buzz, I got the rockets. You got the nuts, I got the chocolates. We got that chit-chat down pat, blah, blah, blah. You got that certain special, je ne sais quoi. Let's go!
The beach like we're Vince Cellini.
Bundle up.
And let's read some of your emails and your tweets and your YouTube comments and get to some of the questions that you guys had. We got some good ones here. First one comes from Nathan Benjamin in NYC. I recently dove into the whimsical world of NBA Twitter and stumbled upon a thread by John Corrales discussing the NBA belt. Oh yeah, I remember that.
Oh yeah.
In another corner of the Twitterverse, I found at Dwight's face offers a unique statistic, tracking the frequency of Dwight Powell getting hit in the face during a game. I didn't know about this account. I gotta follow this. This leads me to ponder about the rich lore of unofficial NBA statistics. The wedgie, for instance, has become an iconic part of NBA culture. My question to you, the experts of the hardwood, is this: what other unconventional or unofficial NBA stats or trends do you think deserve recognition and tracking? Again, that's from Nathan in NYC. You can go follow Nathan there on the Twitter/X. Who's got a good answer for this? What unconventional, unofficial NBA stats should we start tracking?
I've got too many answers.
Oh, okay.
I'll do one, just quickie. This is totally from last night. I had others on the list, and then I just saw Kevin Durant stand and make a block shot without jumping. Okay. So I just want standing blocks, literally guys that don't have to jump, and just see who's got them in the league, because Victor Wembanyama could have one. He almost blocked John Morant when John Morant two-hand dunked him on him after that crossover. So just a block shot without jumping. We'll start with that.
No jump block.
Both feet
like
have
that
to be on the ground, or will we have like detailed stats like 1 foot's on the ground?
Yeah, it is going to be annoying for everybody working at the sideline. Did his toe leave the floor? Did his 1 foot leave the floor? It's tough.
Right.
Did heels as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if any part of your foot is on the floor,
counts.
You're not jumping.
Yeah, true.
You're just reaching.
Okay.
So we'll start with that one.
Right. You're not technically jumping even if just 1 foot's in the air.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one foot is on the floor.
Feet
yeah
have to be on the floor. Foot,
okay.
Feet, foot, whatever.
Standing blocks. We're tracking that. I like that.
I would also add the stipulation. The block has got to be above the waist. because you get a lot of a lot of noise from low strips. Carmelo Anthony, low strips. Oh, Alex Caruso, low strips.
That they sometimes count as blocks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That ain't
the guy's
a block.
Going like, exactly. Yeah, it would have to be more. That's what I'm saying, like above the waist. Yep. The shot is going up. Yep. But Wembanyama would lead that every single season.
I would think so.
It could be.
Yeah, I mean.
He got OG really good this year.
Yeah, he did. Oh, that was early in the year, when he was on the Raptors.
He got somebody else in the first couple of weeks of the season, too. I forget who it was.
I'm like, I'm trying to picture, like, does Chet have any standing blocks? I mean, sure he does.
He does, for sure. Yeah, I saw one. Yeah.
Okay, I like it. What do you got?
Jump ball win percentage.
Sure.
Who wins the most jump balls?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I found out that it already exists on a website called, I'm not joking, otherbasketballstats.com.
Wow. Somebody ahead of us here.
Otherbasketballstats.com.
I'm going.
So, of course, I went deep to get some jump ball statistics here. Anthony Davis has the most wins in the jump ball circle this year. He's had 54 jump balls, 30 and 24. Not bad. Who do you think has the best percentage winning jump balls, minimum 20 jumps?
Of just this season?
Just this season.
Minimum 20 jumps.
Wembanyama?
No, he's at 64%, which is pretty good, but we got three guys who are in, who are above 70% win percentage.
Wow.
Gobert?
No, I was surprised. Not Gobert either.
You know, this is a weird one because he's a big lumbering man. Brook Lopez?
No, but he is pretty high.
I think he's
pretty
good.
High on the list.
He sticks in my mind that he's pretty
good. He's very good.
Okay.
You would maybe a Wembanyama shaped guy.
Tall and skinny?
Yes.
Bull?
No. 20 jumps.
Derek Lively?
20 jumps.
No, not Derek Lively.
Porzingis?
Porzingis is third.
He's huge.
And then we got two guys who have won 72.5% of their jumps this season. Both Eastern Conference guys.
Hmm.
No, he's injured now. Not Mitchell Robinson.
Not Mitchell Robinson.
Miles Turner?
No. both potential All-Stars. One is will make it, and one is a borderline case, I would think.
Hmm. Oh, Bam?
Bam.
Surprising.
I know.
Pretty short.
He's not tall.
Yeah.
He's like 6'9".
It's all timing, baby.
It's all about timing with Bam, and then the other guy is Jared Allen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's got tall, long arms. Yeah.
He's just smart, too.
Yeah, the worst guys in the league, John Collins, Ivica Zubac, and Domantas Sabonis. It adds up.
Yeah, that all checks out.
Sabonis and Zubac, not great jumpers. John Collins is a little bit shorter. And then this is my favorite stat I found on otherbasketballstats.com. Mm. Who do you think has the most jump balls without having lost one yet? This guy has 5 jump balls that he hasn't lost yet.
Okay, so he's obviously not a center, I would think.
He's not a center.
Yeah.
He is the opposite of a center.
Wow.
Somebody who goes and gets those extra possessions.
Isn't an athletic point guard, at least?
Kyle Lowry?
More of a Lowry type, I would say. He's known
Brunson?
For being,
Jalen Brunson?
No, he's known for being fast, but maybe not for being a jumper.
Oh, so it's not Fox, obviously.
No.
He's known for being fast.
It's honestly crazy.
Colin Sexton? No.
He's known for being fast, but not
a bench player as well.
Okay.
So, I mean, maybe that gives you a hint. This guy's getting into a lot of jump balls.
Yeah.
Via scrapping.
Like, is it
TJ McConnell?
Close.
That's a good guess.
Close.
That's a pretty good guess. Mm-hmm.
The young TJ McConnell. Peyton Pritchard.
Mm, wow.
5 jump balls, hasn't lost yet.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Okay, this is a great stat. Yeah. I love this.
Shout out to otherbasketballstats.com.
Yeah.
What a name
for
a website.
How the hell are they tracking that?
I don't know. I mean, they have... It's in the play-by-play,
yeah,
right?
Like
the jump balls
I was going to say, it's just
going
to be pulled somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, that's...
This looks like a good website. I tried to type it in, but the standard URL didn't work. I was pissed off, but then I Googled it. It worked.
You got there?
Yeah. And I would add something here to the dunk leaders, because I was thinking of this yesterday. Dunk leaders are here on other basketball stats, but I'd want to know random stuff like putback dunk.
Mm.
Who's doing well with the putback dunks?
Mm.
Or, let's go crazy, a one-hand dunk. Versus two-hand dunks. just get stats up
alley-oops,
there.
Alley-oops, I assume, dunk. Or are they trash?
No.
Oh.
Not that I know of anywhere. So an alley-oop dunker or an alley-oop passer, this man has completed
16 alley-oop
passes.
Yeah, like what percentage? Yeah,
passes.
Yeah, like that. That's
yeah,
really
so
good.
Know every part of a dunk. You break it up into 10 different categories, but then you can put them all there together. So there's lots there to be done with dunks.
Okay, I love this. I'll add my answer, though. You guys have just knocked this one out of the park. How about tracking courtside incidents? I'm talking spilled beverages. Okay, I'm talking errant doinks to people sitting in the front row or a couple rows. How about, I like this one. The percentage of executed high fives between a player and a fan. How many are left hanging? How many actually we get nice hand-on-hand clap? How many are just botch jobs? Maybe some butt pats tracking stats. You know, when some a guy falls in there. You know, how they go about it. I want all of those, that minutia when someone goes into the to the front row or two and track it all. Okay.
Who's leading the league in butt pat stats?
I don't know. I mean, who goes into the stands the most?
It happens a lot.
I mean, I feel like Lowry, every game I watch, Kyle Lowry's in the stands at one point.
A lot of surface area, too.
That's right. Accidental butt pats. They don't even mean to. Someone 10 rows back is like, yeah, he's touching his butt. Yeah, exactly. Good stuff.
Next one. All this talk of all spectacle/spectacled teams has me thinking of the opposite. What is the best team you could assemble from the most unwatchable players of all time? Whoa, Alex. Good question. The most unwatchable players of all time.
It's difficult.
Great question. Crowdsourced it last night because I didn't have a full five. I actually think point guard and wing are the hardest positions to find because even, you know, even like the most infuriating athletic guys do cool stuff from time to time.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to find the bigs is what I'm saying here. So
that's true.
I asked on Twitter last night, got a lot of responses. People had a lot of answers here. So I'm going to start with a guard. I thought the point guard was a hard spot. I got D'Angelo Russell.
Okay, I can see why.
Because I don't understand how this guy has such a devoted fan base. When he's hot, it's like cool step backs, and it looks okay. But I don't feel like he has a sick highlight reel or anything like that. He's a good passer.
Mm-hmm.
He throws some flashy ones, yeah. But I don't know. A lot of people were voting for Trae Young as a guard.
See, I knew, like, in answering this, or people like doing the crowdsourcing, like you said, that there would be like, I assume, like a lot of Trae Young, Harden, Embiid, like the idea of like
those were the top three guys
that
grab
for
and Giannis as well.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. Which I mean, I guess you could look at it that way. It's all personal opinion, but okay, D'Angelo Russell.
I was surprised to see a lot of people were saying SGA as a flopper.
Interesting. Okay.
Easiest choice, shooting guard James Harden.
Yeah.
Yeah. Biggest vote getter out there. He's changed his game a little bit here, but people are tossing it back to the Houston days when it was only step backs and arm rips.
Yeah.
Here's a tough question, though. Small forward. I'm going to give you four choices.
Okay.
Paul Pierce, which was a high vote getter as well. The old man game. Lots of pump fakes. Yeah. Not a guy that people root for all that often at this point in his career. But despite Paul Pierce sometimes being infuriating, in the clutch time, he was fun to watch. I'll give him that.
I think people have been infuriated post-career, probably, about Paul Pierce.
Yes, I agree.
You know what they used to call him? Put him away, Paul.
Put him away, Paul. They called him that back in the day. Carmelo Anthony?
Oh, wow. And see,
that was a no for me
as
well.
That's insane.
No. Yeah. I was surprised that one got suggested so often. I don't know. Josh Smith?
Hey, highlight reel guy.
He's got great highlights. Yeah. That's the thing for me. I think that's more of, if you're a fan of his team, he could be infuriating to watch.
Yeah.
Because you're like, why are you shooting so many threes, Josh?
Yeah.
And then Kyle Anderson was another guy who got a handful of votes. I think because he's very slow, but then his free throw release, that thing looks crazy,
man.
Yeah. I know that free throw smells crazy in there. So I don't know who you're going with. Paul Pierce, Carmelo, Josh Smith, or Kyle Anderson.
I think I probably go Paul Pierce.
All right,
I probably do. Yeah. You know, that's because, maybe he was always beating our teams and stuff like that. And he was just, like, easy to hate for some reason.
Yes, he was.
And the way he plays, for sure.
You're going to shoot another 15-footer from the right elbow?
Yeah.
Right. And it's going in again? That is infuriating.
Poop pee. I'm giving it to poop pee, for sure.
Well, that works.
All right, my first choice here for most unwatchable player in the league, it's Julius Randle at power forward. If he's destroying your team, it sucks, man. Because you're like, he's just running over your guys, throwing some slop up to the rim, it bounces around and goes in, or he shoots an 80-foot-high three-pointer that you're like, there's no chance that goes in, and it's somehow the purest swish. Every basket he scores looks like a mistake.
Yeah.
Every shot is tough, and when he's cooking you, it sucks, man.
Yeah. It's a good one.
I feel like I had a lot of Knicks fans also voting for Julius Randle on this one, which is hilarious. And then we got a lot of choices at the center position. There's some guys who were tough watches offensively. So choose between your four here. Rudy Gobert.
Okay.
Not a great offensive player. No. Just airballed a couple of free throws. The Clippers were loving it, but he hit four straight to win it from Minnesota. I also got Tristan Thompson in the mix.
Okay.
Not a stellar offensive watch. And then two currently retired players, Kendrick Perkins, and to show that I'm not being completely biased here, Joakim Noah, who I can't imagine was an enjoyable watch for non-Bulls fans.
Right, right, right.
So Gobert, Tristan, Perkins, or Joakim Noah.
Who are you picking? Who are you picking?
Who am I picking? Yeah, the media hate is real with the Kendrick Perkins, that's for sure. Fine with Gobert these days. I don't know. I've grown
on him. He's
the best
player.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And he doesn't try and shoot and all that. So I can understand. He kind of looks like Joakim Noah sometimes. The dribbles ain't that pretty. but he gets things done. Perkins. And who was the fourth that I really want to take?
Noah. Joakim Noah.
Oh, I can never take Joakim Noah. I love that guy. This is tough.
Backdoor passes.
I think it's Perk or Tristan, so I'd probably go Perkins.
Remember when he hit that jumper from the free throw line? And he did like a full lunge with the release. That was an amazing shot. I heard they were going to make that into the new logo at one point in time, but they just haven't figured out the design yet. So, okay, our most unwatchable players, D'Angelo Russell, James Harden, Paul Pierce, Julius Randle, and Kendrick Perkins, making the list.
How good would that team be?
Russell, Harden, Pierce, Randle.
That's not a bad team. Like,
that's
at their
a lot
peaks.
Of lefties. Three lefties. Wow. Russell, Harden, and Randle. A lot of guys who can score. A lot of iso ball, though, I believe.
At their peak of their powers, for sure.
And Perkins just out there screening hard.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Getting them open.
Creating space, man. That team's winning 40 games.
Oh, yeah.
Team's in the play-in for sure. All right, next one here. Knights of the No Dunks table. You guys mentioned on a recent pod that the Kings just can't seem to beat the Pelicans this year. And that's probably an understatement. The Kings are 23-13 against every team except New Orleans. However, you know, against those Pelicans, they're 0-4, scoring just 105.5 points per game, which would be last in the NBA, and allowing 126.5 points per game, which would also be last in the NBA. Pelicans have just owned them. Given their success against other teams, you'd expect the Kings to be at least a little bit better against the Pels, but they're really, truly terrible. Which leads me to my question. What is something that other people, or you, yourself, would expect you to be good at, but you're actually really terrible at it? And that is from Josh Shanes. What is something that, other people, or yourself, you would expect to be good at, but you're just not? Anything come to mind?
Answering this question, in all honesty, this ain't a good answer, I gotta say. Although I will say cooking. When people think of Greek food, they think, damn, that's good, because it is good.
Yeah.
However, I've been pampered my entire life. My mom made me every meal I've had. My wife, Danielle, is a cook. I don't cook shit. However, we do have a jar of leaves, so I'm looking forward to making some dolma this 1 year.
There you go.
But I might just
1 year.
I might just leave them there for a couple of years. So, not a good answer there. But like my man John Corrales, we love Greek food.
I think it is a good answer. I could see people would, I don't know, I think you're right. People would expect you, like, you probably know your way around the kitchen a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I made an eggnog a few weeks ago. It was good. It wasn't a Greek nog, but it was still good.
Okay. What do you got here, TK?
If I'm at a new pickup run, I like to make sure people know that Trey is my given name. Not earned from 3-point shooting. Look, my mom just liked the name, okay? She saw it on a soap opera. Got a tattoo for a three, but it's just because of my name. No, I'm not shooting threes out there.
Right. You had a nice, well, this was a couple weeks ago now, but you had one night you were on fire from distance. Well,
that's true.
You were
that night I earned it.
You did. Yeah. Like, that guy's name's Trey. He's on fire from three. My answer for this one, I'm pretty meticulous. I like things done a certain way. I'm pretty anal. I should be good at wrapping gifts. I suck at it. And I hate it. But it's weird. That should be a thing. Like, am I right? Yeah. Don't you think?
I'm surprised that you're not.
I know. Yeah. I can't stand it. I get frustrated with it. And then I just don't care. And then it's the whole idea is like, why am I doing this? Like, someone's just going to rip this apart, start getting in my head about it.
Oh, that's what it's about.
Mm.
It's the logic of it.
The logic. What am I doing?
Yeah. Pardon
the
pun.
It's a waste.
Yeah, that's true. You got an answer for this one, JD?
People are intimidated by me on the pickleball court. I'll walk on. I'll have my headband on. I'll be all decked out. I suck. I also look like I'm gonna slam the ball a lot.
But people are like, but
I'm a very much a let's slow it down. Let's dink, guys. Let's keep it dainty and dinky. That's how I like to play pickleball.
Dainty and dinky.
That's right. I can't handle the big slams, so yeah.
But you think when you walk up to that court, people are like, oh, this guy.
I can see when a 65-year-old woman starts to I don't want to play this guy. I'm like, don't worry.
And then they kill you?
Yeah, they destroy me. Yeah.
So. Don't judge a book by its cover.
That's right.
Don't judge a bearded man. wait. Don't judge a pickleball player by his beard.
That's right.
I guess.
Old saying. Yeah. I hear that a lot.
All right, slam ball. Slam ball would be fun, seeing JD slam stuff. Mm.
Hold on. Before we move on, because this came up, actually at our pickup run on Thursday, we started talking about our podcast. Have you ever shot a basketball?
Shot a basketball?
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Okay. Is it on film? Have we ever recorded you shooting a basketball?
No, because I'm usually the one shooting. So
yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay. Because that came up. We were like, we were talking about, we've been doing this nearly 20 years. And, JD's our producer. He doesn't like basketball that much. And then we're like, in fact, I don't know if he's ever actually shot a basketball. We were sort of joking. And then we were like, hold on, has he?
Wait a second.
I can't remember footage of you ever doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's ever. It's not caught on film.
There is footage.
I don't shoot on film. No.
But I've played with my kids.
Yeah. Okay. So. Okay.
But I stink at that. That should be my answer. People are like, "Oh, you've produced a basketball podcast for 20 years? Oh, great. Let's talk. Let's break it down. What are your thoughts?" I have no thoughts. I don't care.
Oh, you just love the game. You only play it?
Nope,
no, never touched
not really.
A ball in my life. Don't care for it, to be honest. Right,
I don't really like sports, actually. I'll see myself at.
All right, final question here. Hey, No Dunks crew. Is Alperen Şengün an all-star? No, but on a serious note, who are the guys you would love to see make an all-star game this year? Even though, it's not going to happen for them. Could be young guys who just haven't proven themselves enough, or guys that would just make the all-star game more fun. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, Nate. So who you got that won't make it, but you just want to see him there?
Okay, I got a few names here. I'm sort of predicting some all-star snubs, I guess, is what we're getting at here. I think Scotty Barnes is going to be an all-star snub.
Same, yeah.
I do not think he will be selected, at least in the first go-around. Trey has always brought this up, that once you get into the injury replacements, a lot of the guys that maybe should be there eventually do get there. But the first batch, and the biggest reason is the Raptors are 15-25.
That's a big reason.
And that's going to be a big knock against him. Now, he's only one of six players averaging more than 20 points, 8 boards, and 5 assists. The other five are Jokic, Giannis, Embiid, Sabonis, and Luka. So that's rare company there. And he's a great defender. Racks up the stats in the disruptive defender stats there. So he's good. He's will eventually make an all-star team or two or three or four, but I just don't think he's going to make it this in the coming weeks. I guess we're going to find out somewhat soon here.
Yeah. So and Trae Young's on a losing team, and he'll probably get picked first as well. So
he might get voted in.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see, I guess, with the players and media and all that. But
yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I got Scotty Barnes. I also have Jamal Murray.
Yep.
Now, he's missed time, and that's the big knock against him. He did miss some games because of a hamstring and ankle injury. But the record is really good when Murray plays, and it's pretty average when he misses time. I think they're 8-6 in the games he doesn't play. And, I think off of last year's finals run, we were coming into this year going, oh, Murray's going to be a lock for the All-Star team. But because of the missed time and because of the talent in the West with the guards, it's like SGA and Luka are going to start, and then it's like there's Fox and there's Anthony Edwards and there's Curry and there's, Harden even is making a case here late. Like, there's a lot of really good guards. So I think Jamal Murray might get squeezed again.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's definitely a possibility. The guy is a playoff performer. His numbers are way better in the postseason. He averaged 26 points last year to win a title as the number one guard, essentially. The year before that in the playoffs when he played, also 26. But this season, 20 spot. Anybody does that these days. And it's West is just tough. So it's going to be hard to pick a second player, I think, from the Nuggets.
I got two more bigs in the West that we've talked about before. Chet Holmgren and Victor Wembanyama, I don't think, are going to make it again on the first pass through. But great numbers for rookies. Obviously, success for Thunder and Chet. Can't say the same for Wembanyama and Spurs, but these guys will be making multiple All-Star teams in their future. I just don't think they'll get there this year. And my final one, and this is a name that's been up coming up in conversation a lot about, is All-Star candidacy. Derek White. I wonder if he is going to get there when the coaches select. Because if it's Halliburton, and let's say it is Trae Young right now starting, there's still Maxey. There's Donovan Mitchell. There's Jalen Brunson. There's Damian Lillard. I mean, Jaylen Brown, I know he's not a guard, but he probably be selected as a forward along with Tatum, who will be starting. I think it'll be tough. And, you know, he doesn't have those crazy statistics either. I think our guy Dan Devine compared Derek White this year to Mike Conley from a couple years ago when he finally made it as an injury replacement. The idea, like, you know, they're like the third or fourth leading scorer on a really good team. And that's what Conley was at the time when he eventually made his first one. And that's sort of Derek White here now, because it's not standard box score numbers that are going to blow you away with Derek White. Great player. Just a lot of other good talent on that team, especially if Porzingis is also there. So those are my five. Scottie Barnes, Derek White, Jamal Murray, Chet, and Victor. I mean, there's probably other ones. Anyone else you got?
I think Maxey. I think he could easily get squeezed here because of all the guys you mentioned. Yeah. Well, they faltered a little bit when it was Maxey running the show and Embiid was out there like 3-7 or something like that. I don't know exactly what it was, but he had a really, really hot start and he's been good since, but he wasn't, you know, 50% from the field and 50% from three like he was at the start of the season. And then there's all those other guys who just have the all-star rep ahead of them. And if Trae Young gets voted in, that kind of takes a spot that could have gone to Maxey. And then to Nate's point here, I think Şengün could be squeezed out as well in the Western Conference. He's at 21 points a game, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. But the Rockets just dropped out of the play-in. They're just now under 500, and there are so many Western Conference big guys who could make it. Jokic, LeBron, AD, KD, Karl-Anthony Towns, Gobert, Chet and Wemby, Kawhi, Paul George, Sabonis, Markkanen. Like, it's just going to be tough to beat all of those guys to make it into the game. So, good call, Nate.
All-Star starters are announced next Thursday, and the week after that, February 1st, they do the reserve. So at some point here in the coming weeks, we'll do our podcast, probably on a drop podcast where we make our picks and debate our picks and all that. But man, you just listed all those guys in both conferences. There's going to be a whole lot of like, damn, tough to leave so-and-so off. Hope for an injury, a fake injury to a guy to get another name or two in there. Cause there's going to be a lot of guys, left on the outside looking in. Anyone else you'd add?
No, you guys covered everything. I was definitely thinking, you know, Barnes and Jamal Murray, when is the first time he's going to make an All-Star game?
He's got to score more than 20 a game in the regular season. Jamal's not that much anymore.
Yeah. And he's got to play. Yeah. So that's a problem. But guys who are playing with low-scoring guys, it helps their case. Like the Celtics, it helps Derek White's case that he's playing with Jrue Holiday because they're the top team.
Yeah,
and Porzingis is not guaranteed to be there either, so it could be Tatum, Brown, and Derek White. Because the Celtics, you got to take a lot of guys from the Celtics.
The Celtics are like really the only team on pace to win easily over 60 games at this point, halfway through the season. But will they get four All-Stars? Because that's what we're getting at. Tatum, Brown, Porzingis might be there.
Porzingis might not be there.
I know. And then Derek White, so he's the third or fourth guy on that team.
Yeah,
I don't think he's going to be there. At least until maybe an injury replacement is announced, because it's just there's just too many other good guys that are deserving. But
yeah,
we'll see.
Celtics haven't lost at home yet, 19-0. I want to see if they go 41-0 at home.
I got to get something off my chest. Nothing drives me crazier than sending a message to a group chat and getting no response. That's why I'm a big emoji responder. Love a hang loose hand or a salute, but man, it hurts when you send a message and get nothing back. Ouch. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. Designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/nodunks today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/nodunks. This episode of No Dunks is brought to you by BetterHelp.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
The Los Angeles Clippers are moving into a new arena next season. It's called the Intuit Dome. They signed Kawhi Leonard to an extension, and then they said, okay, you want to buy seats, you want to buy seats, you want to buy seats. And then the announcements about the seats started happening. Very exciting. It's called The Wall. There's one section of 51 uninterrupted rows of fans. So it's all Clippers fans, and here's Front Office Sports tweeting it out. Here are the rules. You cannot cheer for the opposing team. You cannot wear opponent gear. And if you resell your tickets, it can only be in the Clippers marketplace to sort of guarantee that there'll be Clippers fans. And then it says the season seats in the wall range from 5,000 to 25,000 fans. And then owner Steve Ballmer, he talked about the wall. Let's hear it.
Stay in your seat or get up. You get up, we're going to know that you stood up. As long as you want us to, you've got to give us the permission. We'll know that you get up. We know that you cheer. We know how loudly you cheer. If you're good on those things, we can give you a little discounts around the shop just to reinforce that excellent behavior that we want and need of our fans to make this thing rocking. I mean, look, our fans have a role to play with our team. This isn't just for the fans to enjoy the experience. If our fans do their job right, it's going to help our team play better. And that's super important to us.
Stevie Ballmer.
Can I just say something for the podcast listeners that aren't watching on YouTube? That was Steve Ballmer and not John C. Reilly.
For your health.
It's uncanny to me, man. What it does sound like. Oh, my God. Sure.
Yeah. So, let's hear the details of this one section that's sort of behind a back, one net.
Yeah.
One backboard, 51 rows, 300 fans. What's your take, Trey?
Feels good,
yeah. Yeah, I like it too, actually.
It's just an extreme version of, like, the six-man section they have here at the Hawks.
Yeah.
But here at the Hawks, it's like, what, eight rows maybe? It's kind of up and off to the corner. But then you'll often see at a lot of games, like I know they do this at Bulls games during the second half, they give everybody thunder sticks for behind the backboard to go crazy. So when the opposing team is shooting free throws, they're seeing, in Chicago, it's literally hot dogs that they're hitting together, like Portillo's hot dogs, which is funny. But they're combining the classic fan section and the classic fan section behind it, and we're just saying, this is everything. That's cool.
Yeah. It looks cool in the rendering there. Like, it could look like, you know, maybe intimidating. I just want to know how many games will it take until there's an incident with, no doubt, a Lakers fan who sneaks his way into the wall with all Clippers gear, and then at some point in that game takes it all off, and there he is in the the Lakers gold and purple and all that. That's gonna happen. It's gonna be hilarious. And then what goes on? What do they escort this fan out? Like, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
Just block him?
Like, yeah.
You know it's gonna happen. You know it's gonna happen. Lakers fans are gonna be dying to do that. But I will say, like, some people crapping on this, oh, you got to make a wall section, a fan section, oh, you guys, your fans suck, this fan base is non-existent. And it's like, okay, yeah, the Lakers don't need to do this, the Celtics don't need to do this. A lot of teams do need something like this, so why not try it?
Yeah.
It looks like it could be cool.
It looks like it could be cool, and then I start to think, has this thing been built yet? I mean, this is coming in, like, 8 months. Then I start watching some videos, and it does look cool,
100%.
That being said, I think there's a couple little issues with it. I love the idea of all the fans being there. Of course, it's like a soccer stadium. It's fun. If you want to be a part of the Lakers fans, there's still another 20,000 seats in that stadium. You'll be fine. I don't like how they're charging season seats $5,000 to $25,000. Fans need to afford some crap, you know? That's like it can be up there.
They're overpriced.
They're a little overpriced, yeah.
I mean, they're good seats.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
not like up in the nose.
Yeah, I guess they're not overpriced when you compare it to every other arena. They're not
overpriced if I'm being monitored for my behavior.
They're going to know when you're standing up, sitting down, farting,
yeah,
burping.
Fuck that.
You might get a little discount.
A little discount. What happens if the Clippers suck and I want to boo them? From that section.
Cheers. They'll know.
Well, you're going to have to pay more.
Paying $25,000 already? I can't boo. I can't sit there with my arms crossed.
Oh, hell no.
No, you're allowed to boo. I think you're allowed to boo. They're just trying to get Clippers fans in that one section. They're just trying to get Lakers fans the heck out. I think that's all it is. Yeah. I think it'll be fine. They're just telling people, we're trying to get Los Angeles behind us instead of behind the Lakers. It's actually down the road from the old Forum. Like they're trying to sneak in people. They're trying to steal Lakers fans. It's their time. Kawhi
not
Leonard
stealing Lakers fans.
They will.
Man. No, they're not.
Kawhi Leonard is still young. No, is going to be a franchise player forever. LeBron's getting old. It's our time. It's Clipper time. So you know what? I see all those rows and I think that's probably like 10,000 people. It's like 300 people.
Yeah,
it's only 300
looks like
seats.
A lot more, you're right.
It looks like a ton.
Wait,
and it's
300 people?
I don't know how that makes
rows?
Sense. Yeah, maybe it's not
six people a row?
I was going to say, this rendering, this drawing, I don't think it is doesn't. Like to scale, sort of. I think this is like you said it. We have this in Atlanta. There's like three rows of Hawks fans. You have to like audition to get in there.
Yeah.
You have to be a diehard, you know? You're wearing all the gear. You won't sit down. You're doing all the cheers together. Like, we've had the opportunity to be in that section before. It's a lot of fun. It's a fun way to watch a game. It is like, it gives you like that European, the soccer vibes where you're standing the whole game and stuff like that. So I think that's just really all this is, just
some
maybe
of our fans in one spot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a big deal.
300, that's messing with me now.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
There's probably 300 people in the Hawks one.
Right. It sounds crazy, and you look at it, it's like almost
maybe
like one third of the stadium, almost like the way it's sectioned off. Maybe not that much, but there is a website, NBA.com/Clippers/the wall. That's the one. And it literally says the wall will consist of 51 uninterrupted rows of a passionate Clippers fans, blah, 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 blah. And then later on, it says it's 300 seats. Behind the basket and close to the action, the standing only section is built to house 300 of our most energetic fans. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just part of...
Are those two different things, then? Is it possible? Because you
maybe
said
it's just
one
part
is standing
of the wall.
Room only. Hmm. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Okay, we'll see.
Who knows?
I do like the suggestion from Coyote Jester, who says they need the Clipper Bros to cut the ribbon off.
Oh, yeah. You're here first. Turn up. Love you guys.
No pop-off allowed at the wall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, get the Clipper Bros there. Get them in the section.
Those are Clipper men at this point, I bet.
They are. You know? They can legally drink that vodka.
They're going to be given the tickets, I bet, for the entire season. Yeah, that's what I think end up happening. Even with our Hawks six-man section, they just get tickets, I imagine, sometimes.
Yeah, but you got to play your part. Like, you can't – I mean, it's frowned upon if you go to the six-man section in Atlanta here and sit down. You can – but they don't like it. They don't want it. That's not what they're looking for. You know, you got to get into it. But JD, you don't want to be tracked, eh? So
I'm gonna be tracked. I don't want this guy deciding if I'm living up to Clippers Nation or whatever.
I don't want that guy telling me when I can cross the road.
Yeah.
You gotta be wearing
Steve Ballmer is gonna have high standards for passionate cheering.
Oh yeah, he's gonna have a sensor on. You're gonna have to wear gloves, and he's gonna know how hard you squeezed your buddy beside you's thigh, and whether you touched a little dick. He's gonna know because you gotta put
give
on
that
gloves.
Guy a discount. He gets a free hot dog.
Give him a dick count. All right, good. I can't wait for this.
The wall.
This arena, the stadium.
It's so weird that it's called the wall. Why is it called the wall? There's no walls.
Well, I mean, it's, intimidating.
There's no wall.
It's okay.
Just a wall. It's a six people.
No, I thought it was called like the wall of sound. Or yeah, I think they originally called it that. Maybe they've dropped the sound. Timberlake came in and said, "Drop the sound." The wall. No, it'll be soon. Cool, it'll be just wall.
300 fans.
I can't wait to go. I'll tell you that. 2026, we'll be there. Maybe get there before then. I don't know.
You think you gotta audition to sit there? All-star?
Yeah.
You should. You gotta wear an all-star jersey. Cheer for the Western Conference.
Not
only.
On the Eastern Conference.
Oasis will be there. Audition. They'll play the Wonderwall. 300 fans are gonna be so happy. They're gonna be so happy.
All right. Okay, let's wrap this up. Holy moly, we went longer than I thought we would. That's okay. Lots of games on tonight. I think there's probably 10 plus. Got some good ones. Got Mavs Lakers on ABC. Keep doing that.
ABC on a Wednesday.
On a Wednesday, that's right. Yeah. It's an 8:30 start for a Lakers game.
There's a snub for you. Kyrie Irving. 26-5-5. Great fire. Percentages. Not in the All-Star conversation hardly at all.
No. And then we have Bucks-Cavs at 7:30 on ESPN, too. So that's a pretty good one. And a couple of these other games. You never know, though. They don't look all that great on paper, but we'll see. And we'll be here to talk about it tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. Join us then. Hit the like button. Make sure you subscribe, podcast listeners. Hey, do us a solid. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
I still love that guy.
Clipper guys, you're awesome. I think they should come up with a... You just mentioned Kyrie Irving only playing 25 games. Jimmy Butler also only played in 25 games. Yeah. Couldn't miss it. They need a new rule for the All-Star game.
That's right.
You gotta play
right.
75% of
games. Well, Tom Haberstroh was calling it the 79 line. You gotta play 79% of your games to qualify.
79
line.
For all NBA and all the awards or for All-Star?
That's for the awards. Oh, okay. So I don't know what the percentage would be. 50 games, 79%. 38 games. Is that right?
No. 39.5.
Yes.
Embrace the day, people.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.